Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, the immaculate. Now listen to this.
Culture Vulture. The number to call to hop on the air with me is 646-478-4847. Welcome to the Cinco de Marco edition of the show. Not much going on in the world. Not much to complain about. Not much to get into controversial conversations with. Oy vey. I don't even know where to start. There's so much there. I don't know where to start. I don't physically know where to start. Maybe we start with Batman.
You filthy criminal.
That's right. Now, who's the filthy criminal this week? I'm not sure. Being that it is the eco-lunar phase until tomorrow, and we're all in an empathic state, and we're all singing the Whoville song of oneness of humanity, and everybody's together here, as we fly around this rock. I guess the best place to begin would be with a wootorial of our friend Steve. Steve went to a Phillies game on Monday night. Steve is 17 years old, and Steve had a time of his life. Steve was zapped on the field, if you haven't heard about it. His name is Steve Consalvi. We'll start with him because it's the perfect place to start on a Wednesday night here, 9:03. Trying to get a little conversation going here. Where were you Monday night when this happened? Dun, dun, dun. Here we go. YouTube, of course, doing its usual little dance for me. And we're looking at a frozen picture here, 9:03. Steve Consalvi, his moment of fame, coming up. This is highly irregular. You know, most people have these things queued up before the show starts. Not me. Play.
At some point prior to the eighth inning of last night's game, Wayne Consalvi's phone rang in Pottstown, PA. On the phone was his son, 17-year-old high school senior Steve, calling from the ballpark to ask Dad's permission to run onto the field during the game, saying it'd be a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Now, the elder Consalvi, this according to the Philly Daily News, said it didn't seem like a good idea. It turns out they were both right, for all the wrong reasons. For after briefly evading security personnel before the eighth inning, in fact, began, Consalvi is seen here, was felled by a taser gun fired by a Philadelphia police officer. Consalvi was said to be down some 30 seconds after being hit before being escorted from the field under his own power. Now, this is what the elder Consalvi went on to say to the Philadelphia Daily News, calling it just teenagers having fun, he said, and I quote, "I don't recommend running on the field, but I don't think they should have tased him at all," end quote. Now, the team later confirmed it would cooperate with police investigating the use of such force. A police spokesman here, Charles Ramsey, had this to say to KYW Radio, police commissioner, about the incident, and I quote, "It was inappropriate for him to be out there on the field. Unless I read something to the contrary, that officer acted appropriately. I support him 100%.
Well, there you go. So, I don't know. I've been to lots of games. I've seen idiots run on the field before. Never before have I seen the taser situation arise. But, of course, an eco, who seems to evoke this response from authorities, got zapped. And, you know, if you saw it on YouTube or heard about it and saw it on the news, whatever, it's created a little bit of a furor in the sports talk radio circles where I hang. And for the most part, what I want you to take away from this is not the fact that some schnook got on the field and got zapped. Because the next night, of course, another guy got on the field, an adult, and he was escorted off without being tased. And he actually happened to be carrying narcotics. And he wasn't tased. So this is one of those situations where you have to sort of look between the lines here and understand what's going on here. You know, in the cosmic circles that people talk about, you know, creating your own reality and karma and all that stuff. Well, in the somatic approach, you're wired a certain way before you even know that you're wired a certain way as you build your brain. And that's what I want to get into when we get into our guests and stuff like that and later in the show, and to talk about the, there's a biological context for almost every behavior that you exhibit. And you are programmed to receive that message. And Steve, you know, went through the channels, asked mom and dad. Apparently, they're not coming from the authoritative camp. Go ahead, run on the field. You know, his mother said, don't do it. Don't do it. And, of course, he's like going through a yellow light. Not a red light, it's a yellow light. It's not even a traffic light on a busy street. It's like going through, you know, one of the side streets late at night. No big deal, no harm, I'm going to go through the yellow light. And most of the time when you run around the field, what do? They chase you like idiots on their little walkie-talkies, and then they tackle you. And then the crowd goes, they take you off to the side. Now, if you happen to be a woman, you could practically go up and jump the shortstop, and they're not going to care. Double standard? Maybe a triple standard. But the point is that we're in an environment where we're days away. This is Monday night. We're literally, I don't even think we've caught him yet, from the Times Square situation. So don't you think anyone in law enforcement, anywhere in the universe on Monday night, had their, you know, chops ready to bust some heads coming off of Times Square on Saturday night? And, of course, Steve took the wrong week to go to the game because they were going to make an example of him. And that's really what it came down to. They're trying to deter people from running on the field. Of course, they've been trying to deter people from running on the field since games began in ancient Rome. It's not going to stop it. It's just going to basically make fodder like this, make things political, like what's happening with the All-Star Game, for example, out in Arizona. Maybe we get to that later. The point is that everybody has a bias, a slant. And the first wave of that is called self-preservation. Born to be alive. That's all I want to do. I want to be alive, be alive. And, of course, this kid thought that this is like his high, you know, my mama here, we're on the field. And the thing is, we don't filter that self-preservation thing very well because we do not filter it through others. And definitely not through society. Society filters it through us. So what happens is that over time, when things get a little fluxy, you have resistance on both sides, and then you get a lot of these events popping up like we've seen. Now, we're going to go through a couple of them here because there were riots in Greece this morning. We got the oil cleanup down there in the Gulf going on that's not going too well. Some new developments here in our friend from Connecticut here, the Times Square bandit there with the car. And of course, Arizona is on fire. It's you know, as it is Cinco de Mayo here. So, you know, I just want to get that out there as we start the show, is that this is not about having an opinion about any one of those events. This is about understanding that we live in a rocky terrain, and we each choose a path through that terrain. And as we become more aware of that, we create a story behind it. That becomes our identity we must defend because of the self-preservation rule. So, you know, hopefully when we get our guest on here at 9:30, we can get into some nuances of how we can become more aware of that and notice it and start to, you know, just kind of pedal backwards from a lot of these situations, because it gets a little silly, if you ask me, when people get into these arguments. They're one-sided arguments that have two voices, so it gets a little confusing to figure out what you're supposed to do with all that information. Because something happens, an event, your senses tune into it, right? It could be anything. You flip on the news, anything out there, right? And then the next step is that you start to describe what happened in your little head. And then after that, you start to make inferences about what you just described. Like, what does that mean? I noticed that, you know, the Pakistani man left the car there. Do I need to know anything else about this guy? And it goes into zooming and zooming. And what happens is that you start to generalize a lot of these things that you're talking to yourself about into a prejudgment, a prejudice. Now, if nobody challenges that, then that becomes an assumption. And if that assumption becomes a core belief and it becomes a conviction, well, it's really hard to move that out of your system. That's all. That's what the problem is. And for the most part, the media loves to perpetuate the extremes of those two takes on things and play them off against each other because it attracts a crowd. And that's really what I guess I'm trying to get at here, is that most of the stuff we see is out there just to get you to react. That's basically its primary function. And it doesn't really matter what you think of it. Like, when you look at the riots in Greece, it's not your culture, okay? This is your culture. So you're looking through it from here. When you hear people voice opinions about it, again, that secondhand, second nature stuff, you know, you're not really kind of being able to discern what it means. But you do have a reaction to it when you watch any kind of news event like that, you know, violence, whatever it is. And then what happens is you develop a point of view. And that point of view can be either flexible or fixed. There's the extremes there. So you're constantly oscillating between, am I adapting to the situation at hand, or am I adopting a new point of view based on new information? Most people don't have the ability to do the second one very well. We're not really trained to. So just you know, be aware of that as we get a little deeper into the waters here, because it's very easy to manipulate a mind that is not aware of itself. Okay? When you're watching the blockbuster movie, like I saw the movie The Losers on Sunday, right? Shoot 'em up, bang 'em up movie, right? Really, just, you know, typical summer blockbuster kind of stuff. Popcorn kind of movie, right? The same kind of scenes that you watch when you see any one of these, you know, war reports or anything like that. Sometimes they're on commercials now. Boom, it goes to Humvee, right? Isn't the same information, right? Because it's real. Now, if you make the distinction between the entertainment and the news event, you're ahead of the game. Most of us don't. Most of us can't, because they're almost simultaneously being delivered to us. Some things to promote products. So how are we supposed to make a distinction? When you see that scene in Times Square, or what happened on Christmas Day, or what happened when the plane had to get diverted to Maine a couple weeks ago, you know, or when the guy was out in Denver and he was in the bathroom and he lit a cigarette up and everyone went crazy, right? All of these events are the same basic thread, but because of the fact that we have a filter called our belief system that will take that information and put it through, how does that affect me and my self-preservation? Does that get me? Now, you know, New York City is about 40 miles south of this phone, where I am here in beautiful downtown Larchmont. And when stuff happens down there, I tend to take notice, right? Now, when you see the flood, say, in Tennessee, and some dude is standing on his roof, while, of course, you know, turtles are washing up on the beach in Florida, while, of course, Greece is having a riot, it becomes basically a mind flood. You can't take any more information in. You can't process any more trauma. It's too much. So we tend to just mute that. And we can't get empathetic and we can't get concerned. And how does that work? Again, back to the bias. We have a prejudice biologically to stay alive. So anything that we perceive as a threat to ourselves or our identity, we will react with, you know, that knee-jerk kind of no-think reaction. And that's what they were relying on in the media. You know? So if you have any kind of thing to say about it, I'd love to know before we get the guest on here, but 646-478-4847, so that we can start to get into a little discussion about it, because I kind of think like we should, in a way, you know, before we get a little too detailed for you here. But let's see what's going on with our friend, the terrorist. He's a terrorist. Because it's one of those stories that, is, as we get more and more details, again, like all the memetic stuff pops up, right? You get tons of stories. You get tons of things. Oh, should we read the Miranda rights? So, you know, all the things that went on both the Homeland Defense side and on the side of the, you know, the war on terror, all that kind of stuff. So let's just see if we have anything going on here that's new. Tonight, Los Suns will be playing the Spurs. We'll get into that in a second. Okay, accused New York bomber believed to have acted alone. All right, that's the latest story, I guess. And that's important to us because, of course, we link it to Taliban, all that kind of stuff, right? The Pakistani American, now he's officially called that, accused of a failed car bombing in Times Square, believed to have worked alone. Two new surveillance videos emerged of the accused bomber, Fazil Shahzad. Police told the AP that one video shows him in a white baseball cap. Second video shows him buying a weak batch of fireworks in Pennsylvania. The video of him buying the freaking... Wow. Okay, so he's facing terrorism weapons charges, and he admitted rigging the Pathfinder and all that stuff. He's cooperating with the police. He's a 30-year-old son of a retired Air Force official in Pakistan. You think he acted alone? Okay. Raymond Kelly, the New York City Police Commissioner. See, the best part about it, if you want to look at this as a, you know, best part, that night was the White House Correspondents' Dinner. So you had Bloomberg coming on TV with his bow tie on, and Ray Kelly, who's like the real copper, you know, Madison, don't leave town, that kind of guy. He told the Senate panel that Shahzad bought the gun found at Kennedy Airport in March when he appeared to move ahead on his bombing plot. It appears from some of the activities in March he decided to put his plan in motion. He came back from Pakistan February 3rd. It may have been an indicator of putting something catastrophic in motion. Let's see. Let's see what Ray Ray had to say here. Ray Ray.
Now, New York Police Commissioner Ray Kelly praised investigators for cracking this case so quickly. Here's what the commissioner had to say.
It was 53 hours and 20 minutes. Now, we know that Jack Bauer can do it in 24 minutes. But in the real world, 53 is a pretty good number.
And New York Police Commissioner Ray Kelly joins us now. Incredible work, fast work, impressive work. The clues, though, that were left were, of course, extremely helpful, leaving the keys in the SUV leading to his apartment, the prepaid cell phone. All the clues just seemed to come together in helping crack this case.
Yes, the most important one was the car itself. I think the suspect anticipated the car being blown up totally, and therefore, you know, very little evidence would have been left. But of course, that wasn't the case. So the VIN number, the hidden VIN number, was really the key. He had removed the VIN number from the dashboard, but on every vehicle, there was a hidden VIN number on the engine block, and this was found by detectives from our auto crime division who were doing an examination.
Of course, there was great concern that he was able to actually board a flight. How aware were you of his whereabouts when he was being tracked?
I think, you know, he was lost for a period of time. That's not unusual in investigations. I know everybody thinks it's easy to do, but it's not particularly easy to do. You can't get too close to the individual. You don't want to tip them off. And these are judgment calls that are made. Did surface at the at the airport. The Customs and Border Protection record check ultimately identified him.
He almost got away. I mean,
he would have gotten, got on a plane and the plane was taken off. I think obviously that would have been found out as well, and he would have been detained in Dubai. I mean, so I know it's exciting part of the case, and it's easy to a second guess.
Sure.
But the fact of the matter is, he was apprehended in 53 hours. I think that's pretty good work.
I know it's a great concern to you. It's a great concern of many. The fact that just a block from here, somebody was able to drive an SUV into Times Square, loaded with explosives. Going forward, how can you prevent that from even happening?
You're not going to stop people from driving in Times Square. There's no reasonable way of doing that. We encourage people to come here. We're in a free and open society, so this is a big challenge. But as I say, we'd like to have as much information as possible. We're doing a lot to gather that information, but this is the world in which we live.
You are traveling today with Mayor Bloomberg to Washington. Why are you going there, and what are you asking for?
The issue is people on terrorist watch lists being able to get licenses for guns, being able to buy guns. And the mayor has been a leader in this regard in looking for responsible gun legislation. The mayor is going to testify. I believe I'll be testifying as well with the mayor.
I know it's a busy day for you, Commissioner. Thank you for stopping by and spending time with us.
Always good to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there you go, Commissioner Ray. Bringing it down. And he's exo, so, there's not a lot of pizzazz to that little talk, but what are you going to do? Let's turn our attention to the Gulf for a minute here, because there's another story. Like I said, all these things tie together, okay, because they're all based on your bias of self-preservation. So here we have down in New Orleans, down in the bayou there, a little story here on Yahoo. That says the oil may be wreaking havoc deep beneath the Gulf. While people anxiously wait for the slick to wash up on the coast, globules of oil are already falling to the bottom of the sea, with the Bikini Bottom threatening plankton, and from plankton to fish on dinner tables everywhere. The threat to deep sea habitat is a done deal. It's already happening, says Paul Montagna, marine scientist. He's a marine biologist right out of right out of Seinfeld. Hail-sized gobs of oil, the consistency of tar or asphalt, will roll around the bottom. Other bits will get trapped hundreds of feet below the surface and move with the current. Oil has been gushing into the Gulf of Mexico at a rate of at least 200,000 gallons a day. 200,000 gallons a day. Since an offshore drilling exploded last month and killed 11 people. On Wednesday, workers loaded a 100-ton concrete steel box. See this on TV? The size of a four-story building. It's like a big bucket on a boat and hoped to lower it on the bottom of the sea by the week's end to capture some of the oil. Crews also set fires at the worst spots on the surfaces to burn the oil off. So you got a lot of this garbage going on, right? This is pretty wild stuff. Scientists say bacteria, plankton, creatures will consume the oil and then be eaten by small fish, and they'll turn into bigger fish, such as red snapper, and marine mammals and dolphins. The petroleum substances that concentrate sea creatures can kill them, render them unsafe for eating. If the oil settles in the bottom, it will kill small organisms like the copepods and the small worms. We'll lose, it has an impact on larger fish, making matters worse. The deep sea fishing is leaking. There's the well's location. It's near the continental shelf of the Gulf, where a string of coral reefs flourish. Coral is the living creature that puts out the calcium carbonate exoskeleton, and the oil globs can kill it. So there you go. You got that going on. Now, let's see if I can find it here quickly. Getting close to go time here. see if our guest is even going to call in. We have a semi-confirmed guest for 9:30. So we can get here in summertime at these rates. So let's see. There's some stats about this Gulf spill that just, like I said, 200,000 gallons a day. It's just try and picture that. We can get to the flood. We got a lot to get to here. All right, so here we go. 11 million is the size in gallons of the Exxon Valdez spill. 12.2 million is the BP spill. The BP spill is May 1st, so we're already worse than Valdez. 90 days to cap the leak. 1 million gallons per day of oil currently leaking from the sunken BP rig. So 1 million leaking, 200,000 gallons getting into the ocean. 94 million, ultimate size of a spill in gallons if that rate continues for 90 days. Why? 94 million. 6.8 million gallons per day could be gushing out into the well in the worst-case scenario of a blowout. 378 million, if it continues for 90 days, 34 times the size of the Valdez spill. 400 species of animals are in harm's way. 29 dead sea turtles already washed up on shore. We got over 1,000 square miles of oil slick out there. 7,000 miles of federal fishing areas affected. 75% of the U.S. shrimp production comes from the Gulf Coast. So $7 billion for the Exxon Valdez, $14 billion for this one. $300 billion, worst-case scenario. $300 billion. Wow. I mean, there's a lot of stats here. It's just nuts. And again, it's only one of about six stories that are out there now that are putting us in this, you know, constant state of peril. Peril! Because of why? Why?
You filthy criminals.
Right. So, again, you're in a situation of what are you going to do about this kind of stuff? These things are all happening beyond our control. You know, we could talk about the flood down there in Tennessee. There was a murder in Virginia, big time, that got coverage. It was a cross murder. Any one of these stories would have been, you know, given its own theme music and own icon on the news for a month if they all happened individually. But because they all happened together, it brings up a lot of our biases that normally wouldn't surface so, you know, so intensely when we're in a pace that we can handle. But there's so much going on at the same time that it tends to, like I said, tends to lead to this kind of emotional kind of whitewash where we just want to escape from it. We just want to tune it out or minimize it or put it in a place where we don't have to deal with it because it's just way too intense. But our bias and our prejudice is not the problem. We can't get around it. If survival wasn't an issue, okay, if we never perceived the threat, we wouldn't adapt to our environment, right? We wouldn't care about all these gallons of oil going out. We wouldn't react, okay? So we can't uncouple ourselves from that root directory, so to speak, and function. So what are we going to do about all these events happening and piling up on top of us when, you know, the Internet doesn't really kind of sit still? It loves to fester these things. You remember back on Sunday, you know, amongst the leaves, Conan O'Brien gave a little talk about his deal with Jay Leno on 60 Minutes? That would have been a lead story any other weekend. But because we had all these things going on, it was a little frisbee afterthought. Same thing with the correspondence dinner. Usually that leads to a couple of days of breaking down the comedian, which in this case was Jay Leno, how did the president do, blah, 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 and we go through that whole news cycle. But unfortunately, there was a Times Square car bombing attempt going on. You know, these Greece riots. Greece is the word, right? Huge deal. Like last week, we were talking about egging the people in the Ukraine, right? How the media covered that. It's a huge deal what's going on in Greece. But because it's Greece and it's not, you know, Bayonne, New Jersey, it doesn't directly affect your survival instincts, so it gets dismissed. You know, it doesn't hit your beach. So when all these things are happening at your beach, like a dead turtle. So when all these things are happening at once, like I said, you tend to just kind of lump them together and go back to your local world. And unfortunately for us, you know, we're only able to partially do that because of the way of social media constantly reminds you that you're under pressure, that the economy's doing this, and that the war is doing that, and that, oh, my God, what's going on over here? And it, you tend to get sort of caught up in it, you know? And then a kid gets tased in Philly, and everything's better. All right, we're going to take a little breather here. So we'll play a little tequila again, see if our friend dials in. And if we're going to have a guest tonight, we had an assumption of a guest, an unconfirmed assumption. We'll see if he calls in. Nothing yet. So we're waiting for our guest to call in, our mystery guest to call in tonight. He's not a mystery. His name's Dave Licani. I don't know if he's out there. Dave, call the show, please. We've had this happen a couple times in the last month or so where we book a guest and then we get a maybe, and maybe turns into what? Huh? This week? But he's just a good guy, by the way. Let's see if anything's coming in on the Twitter feed. We're checking the Twitter. Nothing. Nada on the DMs. So we will proceed with the next trauma, the Nashville flood. This one damage tops $1 billion. Nashville Mayor Carl Dean comes out and says a little progress on Wednesday, restoring Nashville's electrical and water systems. It's unbelievable with this flood. Downtown remained dark, homes are sodden, patients is wearing thin, 4 days after the flash flood. 29 deaths in 3 states. Nashville's country music scene is assessing the damage at least 3 months before the massive entertainment complex that includes Grand Ole Opry and Country Music Hall of Fame will be able to see guests, which is the summer. Again, think of the economy. Survival does not have a day off. That's the point. And that's why it's sad when, you know, natural disasters happen like this. But our ability to adapt to it is proportionate to our capacity to be self-aware and not exaggerate stuff. Like I said, we go through the same process every time. Here's the event. I tune into it. My 5 senses go, hey, something's happening. And then there's the moment that that hits your senses, the moment that that gets into your being, your soma, which we'll get into if our guest doesn't call in, might as well. The next step is you're going to make a description of that experience that you're having inside yourself. And you're going to say, threat, not threat. And if it's not a threat, bam, when you're not the other. Bam, when you're not the other. Not a big deal. But if you do perceive it to be a threat, you have to somewhat adapt to this thing, right? And you do that by making inferences. You say, well, what do I think about what the description I made about this event I'm experiencing? And then you generalize, and you have a systemic or holistic response. That whole loop gets on turbine engines when you deal with social media. We deal with it so slowly out here in the regular world. You know, like kinesthetic experiences go like at 10 miles an hour in your nervous system. They don't go that fast. Visual things, forget it. Speed of light. So that's why when you have 10,000 ads a week, like we talked about last week with Jennifer Barbie, when you have 10,000 advertisers coming at you a day, You're not aware of these things. They're just coming at your brain, bing, 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 bing. And when things start to add up and pile up and cluster like this, like if you have family down in Nashville, your head's there. You're constantly going, what's going on, right? You have people that, or you do business in the Gulf region. If you're a shrimp guy, you're not sleeping, right? If you have relatives in Greece that are rioting, you might be having a difficult time getting down your London broil tonight. The whole point is, maybe you're in Arizona. You're dealing with the demonstrations about the immigration law. There isn't a vacation for survival. Is what I'm trying to get at here. So that's that crisis. Now I want to see if it's is he calling yet. No, of course not. All right, let's see. We'll go to the next crisis here, just to go down the list. So many of them. Let's look at the lacrosse murder at the UVA. This is interesting. There's a lot of stuff going on. All right, Huffington Post got a little story here. George Ugly, he didn't sound like a murderer's name, right? Now, if anyone's interested, you can go to my website, somaspace.org, scroll down, and you'll see the four domains there. We do a lot of profiling on this show, and I'll explain the difference between somatic profiling and social profiling here in a minute. Very interesting stuff. The more you hear about this murder, or this case anyway, the more you realize how interpretation, that third step in the process when you start to make inferences about an event. This is everything in our legal system comes down to this. It comes down to perspectives. Are these perspectives, convincing enough? So this guy down here, involved in a relationship with the deceased girl, Geardy Love. It was an accident turned tragic, according to his lawyer, right? Basically, he's got to try and prove, because he did admit to getting physical with her. So who knows? So let's see if we got anything here. Oh, there's a little two-minute diatribe.
Investigators in Charlottesville, Virginia are questioning friends and neighbors about the death of a University of Virginia women's lacrosse player found slain inside
AP
her
News.
On-campus house. Charged in the crime, another lacrosse player and one-time boyfriend, George Hughley. Police say 22-year-old Yardley Love was found dead around 2 Monday morning. Authorities were called for what they believed was a woman with alcohol poisoning.
There were obvious physical injuries to her body, which prompted them to immediately secure the crime scene.
Investigators say they did not locate a weapon at the crime scene.
You can imagine that when these kinds of incidents occur, they're horrible under any set of circumstances, but uncertainty and not knowing what happened is particularly difficult for a community like the University of Virginia to deal with.
It's shocking. Actually, I think for most students, it's not an easy thing for students to grasp. But I think with the administration, hopefully we'll be able to get through it.
Both Love and Hughley were fourth-year students and played lacrosse all 4 years. Hughley was an All-American and featured as an Athlete of the Week by WJLA in Washington, D.C.
It's more important that we won as a team today. We've tried really hard to win.
His former nanny is shocked that he could be charged with first-degree murder.
I'm just shocked and confused and just in surprise because, you know, kids can be kids and boys will be boys, especially being a nanny, okay, but never to the point of something to this magnitude.
Investigators say that while someone is in custody, their investigation will continue. The University of Virginia Athletic Department says grief counselors have been provided for both the men's and women's lacrosse teams. The men's team is currently ranked number 1 in the country. Sophia Manos, The Associated Press.
Hey, see what you learned? The lacrosse team is ranked number 1. Why is that important to mention at the end? Again, this is another one of those cases where you're dealing with a bias in the media. You've got two pretty educated people. You got very highfalutin backgrounds. Now you're dealing with murder or manslaughter. Was there intent or was it an accident? All these interpretations is what creates that gray zone that we kind of obliterate when you have a polar reaction to something, a visceral reaction to something, one way or the other, based on your relevance to the self-preservation rule we talked about before. And developmentally, we do this all the time. Okay? First year of your life, your responsibility as a human being is, in terms of survival, is to bond most of the time with mama. And if you do a good job of that, and you're able to have that coupling happen, you achieve what's called neuroception. Everyone write that word down. Neuroception. And what does that give you? Well, it gives the ability to be safe in your environment. And if you're safe in your environment, you can now thrive in your environment during the second year of your life, where the focus shifts from the outside, bonding, to the inside. And you begin to reference yourself. Mine, mine, mine. Terrible twos, right? And when you're doing that, now you're starting to achieve a different sense of clarity, different sense of coherence that is more related to your self-perception. And you look at yourself in the mirror and go, that's me. It's a victory, right? It's another layer of neuroception. First, I perceive myself as being safe in the environment I'm in. Then I perceive myself as being ruler of the world, okay? Now, the third year, you go back out into this world that you feel safe in and explore it. And you forget about yourself. You merge with your surroundings. You love the things you love, and you hate the things you hate. And you have this sort of kind of a gnip-gnop, oscillating, very rhythmic, emotionally kind of colored world, right? Everything becomes lucid. Everything becomes more fruity. Everything becomes more juicy. And you're eco-somatic. You now have a full level of attention. All the way through, from the environment to you, back to the environment. It threads. After the third year of life, though, we get a little complicated in our little brains, and we start to organize all these experiences into categories. And we start to move them around the timeline. And we start to predict, and we start to remember, and we start to expect, and we start to demand, and we start to lie. That's right, lie. We start to lie to ourselves. We develop a belief system that starts to kind of try to influence this environment that we like and the environment that we don't like. And all that polarity spills into our narrative. That becomes our identity. That becomes the way that we behave. Now, biology doesn't care what culture you're in. It will suck in anything it gets from the environment and use it, try to adapt to it. When it gets conflicting messages, it sets that aside, like you push the bill over to the one side of the table when you can't pay it. You go, ooh, I don't think I want to take that one on. And we continually filter through that process I talked about before, where we're primarily just basically, you know, we're time binders as human beings because we're going to save the stuff that we want to repeat and we're going to try to delete the stuff we want to avoid. But we keep pushing things out of our view. And so we become skewed in the way that we perceive things. And because of that, we tend to gravitate to other people who skewed like us. Now, that doesn't mean content. That means wiring. So, first year of life, philosomatic, we bond with other people who think, act, and live like us. Mostly family, but it could be ethnic, could be religion, could be political, could be economic, could be geographical. You know, whatever context you want to put in there, that's what's going to become where most of the safe zone is, see? Then the second year, when you're referencing yourself, now you're going on what's important. What's the priority in that pile I have there? What's the most pressing thing? Because survival says get there quickly. Quickly! And be the authority, right? Now, we usually surrender that authority later on to teachers and preachers and all that other stuff, but in that early stage, we're the authority because we're the center of our own universe at that point. All right, that's ontosomatic, reference myself. And you have a very hair-trigger response to anything that threatens you. And it's extremely direct because it's much more of a reflex, like a rattlesnake coming at you because your information is stacked vertically now. It's not all spewed around horizontally like a bunch of puzzle pieces out in front of you. And what happens over time is that we begin to teach ourselves that if we do those two steps, we can pretty much cover almost everything that happens, right? So we get people that'll agree with us, and then we lead them. And it seems to be a primary way of getting around the world. Now, the other side of that rainbow, of course, is the disagreement, the differences. So the first year of life, you get a lot of references. What's this? What's that? What's this? What's that? I don't know. And you're referencing. And then the second year of life, you have preferences. I like that, not this. I like that. Third year of life, you get emotional about it. You start to weight those things. And you become dismissive of the things you no longer want because you're emotionally attached to the things that you prefer. So you have differences, and you refuse things and develop all kinds of allergic reactions and nasty behaviors to things that put you in a toxic environment or a threatening environment, a perceived threatening environment, mind you. Fourth year of life, you throw all that out, and you create a system, belief system, and then conceptually, then cognitively, then rationally, all these things get layered on until you're 25 years old, and you have an adult brain that is full of so much spyware and so much filtered information that you can't possibly, at any point in time from 25 on, have a 100% pure experience anymore without a lot of inner work. That's where I come in here. It's Soma time. 646-746-4784847. Doesn't look like Dave's going to make it. He said he was traveling. Let's take a look over at Twitter. See if he's magically responded. You would think if a guy says he's going to be on the show, I don't know, Dave. Unless I like you. Maybe he's just unable to comment. But no, nothing. Monday he said he's traveling but should be able to make it, send me the details. That was on May 3rd. So, anyway, we're going to continue to ferret out the crises. So that's the lacrosse murder. So let's see, we've gone through that one, this one. Let's go to Greece. Greece. I need some music for Greece. I don't know. Let's see, politics. Would it be in the politics? I'm on the Huffington Post, I'm getting lazy. Again, you guys want to call in with any opinions about this stuff, you're welcome to it. I'm totally alone here. 646-478-4847. In a black hole of my own construction. Well, Dave Licani apparently can't call me. So depressing. Coming up in 2 weeks, we'll have a canned interview with our good friend Rick Leskowitz from The Joy of Socks. And we'll be right in the middle of a big baseball week. And we're getting into fan energy and intent and things like that there. So I look forward to that as we get more into the deep spring and get ready for a big summer of baseball. All right, so we're looking for our friends in Greece here. Let's see. Huffington Post is confusing. There's a lot going on here. All right, I'm just going to type in Greece. Because it was really kind of wild this morning when you're thinking about everything going on domestically, and then this is little event to us, big event to them going on over there, and it was crazy to see this riot. All right, let's see. Expect nothing. There we go. Greek riot over debt crisis. Wow. The last count this morning, there was three people that died in the riot. Let's see if they've updated it. Let's see. Rioting over harsh austerity measures left three people dead. Torched Athens bank, clouds of tear gas. Fear that the bailout won't stop the debt crisis spreading to other financially troubled EU countries like Portugal and Spain, part of that pigs thing. Credit ratings. Tomorrow there's some kind of report coming out about Spain's debt. It's going to be interesting. The euro sank, dipping below $1.29 for the first time over a year. Fear of the crisis contagion. I like that. And let's see. Political upheaval might keep Greece from keeping its end of the bailout bargain. Is this a clip or not? It says AP. Usually they got a clip. No clips. There's so much going on. Let's see. The shock from Greece is shaking the world market to raise questions about the rally in stocks since they hit bottom in March 2009 can continue. Wow. Look at all this. David Joy, chief market strategist for Columbia Management, a U.S. manager of $341 billion. blows my mind how much money's out there. In stocks, bonds, cash, and other investments, warned against complacency over the U.S. economic recovery, and said this week's events in Greece and Europe should serve as a reminder that the ramifications of the financial crisis are still being felt. See, we're like in numb land when it comes to the money. Well, we're fine. Most of these lingering problems relate to the fact that excessive amounts of debt have been accumulated prior to the financial crisis. It's going to take time for these to be worked through. The outcome is a flight to safety in which dollars rise and money leaves riskier and economically more sensitive, such as stocks and commodities. Even with the bailout, some economists think Greece would eventually default or restructure its debts because economic growth is expected to be poor over the next several years, hurting government revenue. Some also fear the austerity measures insisted on by the EU and the IMF could make prospects for growth even worse. The socialists hold down a comfortable majority, and the bill is expected to pass. So we're going to vote tomorrow on that. Wild. Wild. All right, but that blows my mind. It is a country that's basically hanging by a thread. Hanging by a damn thread. And again, right over our heads. Completely just like, what? All right. Well, it's 9:50. We should get into some Cinco de Mayo talk, I believe. All right, but I do declare. So let's see if we got any protests going on. Cinco de Mayo. It was in my mind. It's going to be a short show. I'm not going to make it much past 10 the way I'm going. Oh, there's a message from Obama. Oh, there's Low Suns thing. I got to cover that. That was important. Business Week actually reported it here, and as I searched the Google. Searching the Google. I didn't do the woo-woo thing.
Woo-woo! You know what I'm saying? Then you got the flows. They didn't trip off the flow masters.
That decoration, man. Just the decoration.
That's it. There you go. Woo-woo. All right. Bloomberg Business Week here. Obama refers to Los Suns jersey at Cinco de Mayo reception. Wow. Yeah, Steve Nash and his son's teammates will wear jerseys let's say Los Suns on them. At the White House, the president drew applause from a crowd on the reception. I know a lot of you will be watching tonight's game. Spurs at Los Suns. Suns managing partner Robert Sarver called the immigration law flawed. Team general manager Steve Kerr told the Arizona Republic that the law rings up images of Nazi Germany. Wearing the jerseys. See, again, you say Nazi Germany, that's going to cause a response in someone that puts them into survival. Just the term. You say Nazi. Some people are going to flinch, right? Wearing the jerseys is a way for our team and our organization to honor the Latino community and diversity of our league. 34% of Phoenix residents are Hispanic or Latino origin at the time of the 2000 census. The criticism of this is that by Latino and civil rights groups, that there have been calls for athletes to boycott sporting events in Arizona, right? The All-Star game next summer, like we're going to care about that by next summer. We can't get this week without six crises. And, you know, we applaud the actions of Phoenix Suns and the management team. Suns wore the jerseys twice during regular season and during past campaigns. First time it appears during the playoffs. It's pretty wild. You know, this is a stance. The Major League Baseball said in April that 28% of the 833 players on Major League rosters were born outside the 50 states. 28 out of 833. I'll do my quick math here. Let's see. 28 divided by what? 833. Yeah. It's about 4%. Well, how could that be? That's what it says. 3.36%. That's not a lot. That seems like a lot, like a really low number. With assistance, okay, well. So there you go. You got that going on. I'm not sure if there's any, you know, like, let's go back to square one here. See, that's how it's playing out in the sports world. Let's see how it's playing out everywhere else as far as Cinco de Mayo goes here. It's really strange. You know? All these things, there were a lot of May Day protests over the weekend about this law, and it does go back to the same thing. You're different than me, and, you know, it's a problem. Fear among U.S. Hispanics dampens Cinco de Mayo. Let's see, let's go to the news. Any sign of Dave? No sign of Dave.
What the heck happened here? There we go. All right. Fear among Arizona Hispanics dampens Cinco de Mayo. AP News. That's actually important. Because, again, if we're talking about a Latino community, like we have the Puerto Rican parade every year here in New York. Again, same problem, causes polarities. But, you know, we're able to navigate through because I guess because we have a diverse and hybrid way of experiencing things here, where once you cross that us-them line, you're back to a one or a zero response. Many Hispanics in Arizona, both legal and illegal, there's two categories for you, are increasingly anxious about being targeted. So they don't go to the parade because they figure that they'll round them up. They don't want to go to the park area. They don't want to go to the park or clubs to celebrate because they're scared. Right? How weird is that? It's weird, but it's like we're doing this. Immigrant rights activists say the law is racist. Supporters deny those claims, knowing that race can't be the sole reason for questioning people. They say the law is enforcing the nation to confront a longstanding problem. The debate played out, like we said, with the Suns. On a day that commemorates an outmanned Mexican army's victory over large French forces in 1862, that's the origin of Cinco de Mayo, talk in Mesa focused not on celebrations, but what will happen to the burgeoning Hispanic community here in the economy. Hispanics comprise 26% of the inhabitants of Mesa, a city divided with Hispanics living predominantly on the west side and whites on the east. It's also home to the senator, Russell Pierce. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's that crazy warden out there, threatening to run for governor over it. People are scared to go out because it might be a raid. My fear is that all my money is invested in my business here and it's going to go under. I mean, what's the difference between this and the venom that is spewing out like the oil in the Gulf as far as causing social stress? I mean, how do you get out of that? Once you label somebody, with one of these categories, like the whole census thing, the same thing. It's just strange. We need to do all this. I don't know. My opinion about it, I'd love to engage with one of you guys about it because there's a lot of layers here, but it just seems like it's not going to happen tonight. So, I don't know, man. We've covered a lot of stuff. What else is left? I feel like I've covered it all. Have we covered everything? Is it possible? I don't know. I think it's time for another break. All right, come back at 10 o'clock with a little wrap-up and a preview for next week's show. So no safe fine this week, looks like, but if he calls in, we will definitely engage. With him. Time here in the wrap-up segment. So, again, top of the show, we went over our Wu-torial, and it just gives me an excuse to play this because I just damn love it.
Woo-woo! You know what I'm saying? Then you got the flows. They didn't trip off the flow masses.
That decoration, man. Just the decoration.
Yeah, you can go check it out. I posted it on the OVI Facebook page, so you can go to the homepage on summerspace.org. Click on the Of Vital Interest link there. It'll take you to that tutorial. You can watch that video for yourself. Feel free to comment. Love to see you comment on it. we'll definitely read those comments on the air, get into a little discussion about that. So, you know, and again, the whole genesis of that, the whole, you know, reason behind it that I made that at the top of the show is because survival and our ability to adapt to our surroundings creates a necessity called prejudice. We can never be free of that. We have to live with that. And being able to live with that means being much more articulate in the conversation we have with ourselves, knowing that we have an inherent bias that's trying to keep us alive. And if we perceive a threat, we're going to get much, much more pointed in our reactions to the events that surround us. So if you internalize those things, see, people think of prejudice as bigotry. Prejudice is not bigotry. Okay, that's the point I'm trying to make, I guess, is to make that distinction for you on a semantic level, because when you're dealing with it from, you know, from the brain, cognitively or whatever, you tend to, like, I hate vaccines, okay, I'm a vitalist. I hate most over-the-counter drugs. I hate most under-the-counter drugs. I, recreational drugs, you know what, I leave them be, because they are, as they say, playtime. And TV, to me, can be looked at as a drug. Anything you cannot voluntarily walk away from, remove from your life, becomes medicinal. Doesn't matter what it is. Could be playing with jacks. Doesn't matter. The whole point is that as a vitalist, I'm looking for things that support and enhance my well-being, not things that, you know, break it down. So what I have that bias because I'm looking at something that's going to affect my ability to survive and deliver, you know, the best meat of the world, right? Now, some people are reckless about it. Some people say, you know what? Doesn't matter. I'm gonna take two out with me, you know? And what does that act of desperation come from? A lot of inherent bias. And the more you are not able to filter that out, the more that festers in you, the more that becomes part of your persona, the more that becomes part of your narrative, the more you identify with it, the harder it is to uncouple from it. And we've had plenty of guests on the show that have pointed opinions, and will, you know, seamlessly merge with those views because they can't, at that point, separate their sensory experience of it internally with their cognitive experience of it mentally. And once that happens, once that, you know, bridge is not a drawbridge, once that bridge is solid, you have assumptions. And once you have assumptions, everyone has them, you get convictions. And that's the way the world is. You know, and the older you get, of course, the categories get more and more rigid, and it's tougher to break free from a lot of those limiting ways of behaving. And if you put that into the culture and feed that out through social media and reinforce it, just like this thing in Cinco de Mayo, they can't go out and do what they want to do because they fear that they're going to get hassled, whether they're illegal or not. So it's like what we're doing is we're creating an external or what they call an extensional orientation, which gets into a lot of stories and labels that we voluntarily Velcro to ourselves and create this division within ourselves. Within ourselves, not between us, within ourselves. That's another distinction. Bigotry is division between. Prejudice is division within. Ah! Give them fries for that. I don't know if I want the woo-woo, Sam. I want something. Something. Give me something. Let's see. I think I got one. Yeah, give me something.
Boozy, boozy, bop. City bop.
There you go. So, it's a prize I gave myself. Let's just see if there's anything going on before I kind of wind down here, because it's been a rousing hour of Cinco de Marco by myself. Anticlimactic show this is. Damn it. You know, I try to put on a good show. I try to get Dave on here for you. Oh. Everybody's out. It's, you know, Dave Lucani, if you're out there, I don't know what happened to you tonight. Hope you had a good time traveling. And we'll see if we get you on maybe next week. Maybe next week we'll get you, Dave. So, you know, no, maybe he's out celebrating Cinco de Mayo on the down low and he couldn't join us. Let's see. Is anything for me over here on the Facebook that I need to know? Oh, I did have to do this. I did want to do this for my Facebook friend here. Let me see if I can find this again. Alana Johnson out there in San Diego sent this to me. And she would like everybody to go to the Whispering Eye Tequila page on Facebook. Whispering Eye Tequila. Just, you know, go on Facebook, look it up, and join the site. And participate over there. They got a lot of offers going on. It's over there in San Antonio. Guess what? Tequila tonight. Drunk responsibly. So you can, if you're in the San Antonio listening area, want to watch the Spurs game against Los Suns, you got a spot to go there. So Alana, there's a shout out. So hopefully you'll get some people over there to the Whispering Eye Tequila Facebook page. Or just go Whispering Eye Tequila, you know, on the web. Let's see if they got the link here. Just get that out quick. Because I'm not celebrating anything. It just says it's in San Antonio, Texas, is all it is. But that's the name of the place, Whispering Eye Tequila. And it's got a lot of weird stuff. WET would be the abbreviation for that. Nice. Somebody sat there and sat still and thought of that one. All right. So I think that's about it. There was one other story, though. Let's see if I go back here. Covered Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, I don't see him. Nope. So anyway, if you guys are out there, you know, we covered the taser story at the beginning. And when you look at the society the way it is, like I was trying to explain before about prejudice and how we heal all this, because it has to happen. I mean, it's just so torn. Some of the things that go on in the discourse that goes beside the events will trigger you. And what you want to be able to do as a walking around, you know, sentient human being and be able to handle a lot of this stuff, because it's only going to get worse, guys. I'm sorry. You can't put this much invisible, you know, intangible negative forces out and not expect people to crack, you know, under the pressure. And like I said, we try to escape. Ecos, of course, being sapes like me, do it by running those yellow lights out there, like running on the field, things like that. And the Antos will be enforcing the rules and become more and more bossy, right? And the Philos will act more fearful, like the Cinco de Mayo crowd that's laying home tonight, right? The Exos, watch them, because next week will be an exo-lunar phase. And they get more and more suspicious, like our friend Mr. Kelly there. So you're going to have more of a reason to not trust each other as this propagates, as this festers and moves forward. You know, so whether you're in the Greece riot, whether you're cleaning up the oil slick that's poisoning thousands of species and millions of gallons are pouring out into the ocean, whether you're involved in the terrorist, trial down there that I guess is starting to form over the Times Square weekend, whether you're involved in an Arizona protest, whether you're in the Tea Party, whether you're going to a ball game this weekend like I was going on Sunday, and you have the urge to go on the field and get tased, keep in mind that Soma knows. And you could always, like I said, dial me up over there on somaspace.org. There's the two Facebook links there, one for Domania, which explains a lot more about these four domains I've been talking about, and the other one is the Of Vital Interest, which gives you much more information about how to deal with this personally to enhance your well-being. All right, so I guess that's about it for me. I'm kind of pissed off, actually. I really wanted to get into this stuff with Dave, but we'll see if we can get him for next week's show. He's a good enough guest that I will give him that out, and we'll try and do that next time. And I'm just mad. I wanted to do that. All right, so let's see. I don't know how we end the show when it's such a frumper. I think I know if I could find if it's even on here. Whoop, almost went right past it. No. All right, you got to look them up. I almost went to the Lonely Boys, but I'd rather do this. Close the show. 10:09. I'm getting out early. Getting out of school early here tonight. On a Cinco de Marco. Actually, a little shout out to my my niece over there sleeping in Armonk, New York. So Sienna Rose is 4 years old today, and congratulations. Next year she'll be Cinco on Cinco de Mayo. How about that? There'll be much celebrating in the Burke household that night. Let's see if we got a nice song to take us out here. Yeah, there you go. All right. Let's take us out. So in celebration, whatever you want to call it, or acknowledging our Latino community, we'll take you out tonight to a little ditty from our friends from Los Lobos. Let's see, it's connecting now. It's like a dance mix. I'm not going there. No, I'm not ready for that. Sorry. Let's try that again. Here we go. There you are. All right. Thanks for joining us tonight here on Summertime. As always, be yourself and be well. Travel light through the darkness. This is your friend, Dr. Mark. Say it once again. Be yourself and be well. Dave Lacani can be found at boldapproach.com. Hopefully have him on next week. Everyone enjoy Mother's Day. There's a survival instinct for us. Spiral on, sapiens.